Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey everyone, Mark from Guitar Nerds here, bringing you some exciting news about Patreon. Now, you may have heard in the last few weeks, Patreon were changing up how they were going to charge you for listening to Patreon podcasts. They've actually now reversed their decision. So if you were thinking about signing up for Patreon, or you were signed up for Patreon and have unsubscribed, Patreon have reversed the decision to make you pay the payment charges, and it's now back on us guys. Great for us. But what it means is that you're not going to get charged any more than you're expecting when you sign up for Patreon. And the way to do that is go to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. If you want to just learn a bit more about it, you can go to the Patreon site. There's a whole blog there that tells you about how the charges work. And you can see all the content that we put up there at patreon.com/guitar nerds. Now, another little Christmas present for you. We're starting this week's episode not with the regular theme song, but something that was submitted by our good friend Moog Gravit. Moog's actually a Patreon subscriber, and he got in touch with a little remix of our good friend Bo Banton doing a bit of rapping and stuff. So here it is, the Christmas episode of Guitar Nerds, with an extra special beginning. Enjoy. We're about to blow Joe Branton's little mind.
Well, maybe. So, I'm an idiot. 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 I'm an idiot. 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 I'm an idiot. 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 I'm an idiot. 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 I'm an idiot. 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 Idiot.
And that's not a problem.
I'm an idiot, 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 idiot. I'm an idiot, 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 idiot.
Joe, put your trousers back on.
No, it's just bent round.
It makes me feel like a travelling giant.
I'm really into fishermen.
I'm super simple.
I'm an idiot. I'm having a load of fun. I'm super simple. I'm an idiot.
Oh, how am I supposed to chew?
I'm an idiot, 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 idiot. I'm an idiot.
Ah, yes. What the heck is Branton's rant on?
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Hello.
That's uneventful. I was in a quandary.
You're in a quarry where?
By the way, you're listening to the world's number one guitar podcast, just to let you know. I didn't know who to introduce first because I've got so used to Matt only being a temporary special guest that I did. You know, should we do a big reveal? Should it be Jay, Joe, and our special guest?
That would have probably been better.
Well, yeah, but
I agree.
I'm ramping back up to the new year when we're all going to be here on every episode.
Full team.
52 episodes.
Full Monty. Yes.
I tell you what, though, I've actually really enjoyed. Just three people being on the podcast.
I mean, if it could be me, you, and Matt, that would be the dream.
I mean, that's absolutely what I was thinking.
The absolute dream. That's the what we call the original, sort of like the Three Musketeers, and then you've got D'Artagnan, who's like the other one. Got the three good old boys, and then the nuisance one. Matt Knight, so good to have you back. How you feeling? Where did you land?
I landed I landed at 1:30 p.m. Sunday. Got home at 3:30, stayed up for as long as I could, which was about 7 p.m. went to bed, woke up at 3 a.m, then went to work at 6:30 a.m. for 9, and then did a full day at work, then came on here and talked to you guys.
Wait, have you been at work today?
Yeah, I've been at work today, all day.
I thought you were just off now, in like forever.
No, too busy, too much to do. So I was at work today and potentially got some work to do tomorrow, maybe Wednesday.
How about that?
Blimey, just absolute trooper.
I know, non-stop.
How does it feel to be home?
Amazing. It really is. It was very, very weird for some of it today. Like just getting on the bus and like contactless card on the bus.
Someone told you to piss off. Like, you were back in the UK. Has anyone sworn at you yet on the street? Anyone been mean to you?
No, I tell you one thing I did notice actually was in Japan, it's really, really rude to talk on your phone on any public transport. In fact, it's kind of rude to talk at all. It's just like it's silent and it's so nice. Just sit on a train, especially like the Shinkansen. You know, a train that goes like 200 miles an hour and just sit there and kind of just look at the scenery and there's no noise or anything. And then like I got on the train home today and there's one guy just like sprawled across 5 seats, just like on his phone, just shouting really loudly at his mate while drinking a can of Scrumpy Jack. And I'm like, oh God.
Really highlights the difference in the two societies in that little vignette there.
I was a bit like, oh.
You mentioned before we started recording that you've been speaking Japanese to people by accident.
Yeah, I tried to get past someone today. I was just blocking the way. And my instant thing was, instead of saying, excuse me, saying the Japanese equivalent, which is shumimasen. So I was just like, shumimasen. And the guy was looking at me and I was like, oh, wait, can I just get past? Just excuse me. And yeah, my pronunciation must have got slightly better because my second to last night I ordered food in Japanese, a kind of really basic Japanese, but then the guy just started talking to me as though I was going to like totally understand what he was saying. And then the same at the airport, I was like, oh no, I'm just practicing.
You're good enough to like do the basics, but a conversation strikes up and you're flummoxed.
Yeah, and you don't realize how quickly, I guess we do the same, but when you're trying to like understand another language, how quickly some people actually talk. And I'm so used to talking English really slowly that even the guys on the last day were like, yeah, I don't know if you can actually speak English properly anymore, because you have to like simplify the way that you say sentences much slower for people. So I was kind of just used to really slow English as well. So it kind of feels strange to talk at normal speed.
I suppose that's helpful being back now with Joe Branton. Like, you
got to really slow it down to...
What are we doing? Yeah, you know.
What's happening?
exactly.
Ah! Matt, I guess the other thing that's worth noting is,
You've come back with a few things.
I have.
And which we will talk about.
Yeah.
He's come back with a whole load of stuff, which we'll talk about the gear, but the best thing that you've come back with, Jay, I think you were about to describe it, but...
I was just going to say the barbers of South Croydon will be praising the Lord for the bounty that's about to come upon them when you walk into whichever lucky barber shop you choose to hit first.
Honestly.
My word.
I don't know.
The Mafro
is in bit full effect. You say barbers, I was thinking like landscape gardener.
I think this is the longest I've ever gone without cutting my hair. And I knew when I went out there, I was like, I need to get my hair cut, even after the first month, because I usually get it cut every like 3 or 4 weeks. And they were like, maybe it'll be difficult for a Japanese barber to cut Western hair, because it's like it's different hair. And I'm like, I just want it shaved. And they're like, yeah, maybe impossible. I'm like, it's not impossible, is it? So 1 month rolled on to two, and I was like, look, guys, I need to cut my hair. And the guy was like, I was like, look, can I just have some clippers? And they're like, oh, yeah, I've got some clippers. I'll bring them in. And I was like, brilliant. It's 2 days before Amy gets here. I can shave my head and look totally normal. And I came in. I was like, oh, have you got those clippers? And he went, yeah, I dropped them on the way here and they smashed.
the only man with hair care products wild enough to tame Matt Knight's the boof that's going on at the moment.
Yeah.
I feel it's good. I think you should keep it.
No. Well, not after three different people thought I was the same mass murderer. But they
What, the which mass murderer?
Good old Peter Sutcliffe.
Yeah, you do look quite a lot like Peter Sutcliffe. obviously, audio people listening to this probably won't get that, but Matt
you could just Google it and then you'll just go, oh,
he just looked straight into the camera and it was terrifying.
Looking forward to getting my hair cut tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's... if you actually manage to wangle a day off, I think that should be on your list of things to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Or just keep it. Keep a little Christmas throw. I'm into it.
It could get out of... I mean, it just the thing is, what happens is it eventually just gets too heavy and then I kind of just end up with a mullet. So no,
that sounds good. That sounds even better. Put some Christmas decorations into it.
Mallet, the mullet. Yeah, you could call it the mallet. It's kind of between Matt and mullet.
The mallet. Then, I like it. So... I think the question that everyone's dying to know, and if you've been listening to Matt in Japan, the incredible tour diary that Matt's been doing over on patreon.com/guitar nerds, obviously you don't want to completely repeat the stuff that you've said there, because that wouldn't be great value for our Patreon subscribers. But just in a quick rundown, what things did you buy and bring back with you?
So I bought a Boss SE70, which is a multi-effects processor from the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Like a half-rack size one, which is actually kind of cool because it's all digital effects but analog distortion.
I seem to remember that. And you've talked about those before, I think.
Yeah. So I bought one of those because it was like ridiculously cheap. I bought a CE300, which was the analog rack chorus they did, which was basically like a CE2 in a rack chorus. I bought an old Long Dash DS1, so like 1978 DS1, for £21.
What sort of money did they go for over here?
Like 100 to 150 quid.
Blimey.
It was in Hardoff, the incredible secondhand store.
Still the greatest shop name ever.
Matt, question for you. When you say Long Dash, do you literally mean the dash in between the S and the 1 is longer?
They'd made it shorter.
In the first production, the first kind of 2 years of production, I think, the dash in between the S and the 1 was slightly longer, and then they shortened it later on.
Cool. Kerning? Is that what that's called?
Yeah. No, kerning is the width between the letters.
The dashes on the traffic light pedals is longer as well. It was all earlier stuff.
Yeah. All this early stuff, and before they switched to the black screw, and it was like the silver screw as well.
Yeah. So what else did you get?
I actually bought the weekend before I left, I actually managed to pick up a really early Boss SD1 made in Japan for 20 quid, which was amazing. I was like, oh yeah, I'll take that, definitely. What else did I buy? C300, SE70. I bought an FZ2 Hyperfuzz.
Oh god,
the Boss
really?
Pedal that everyone wants at the moment.
Did you buy
FZ2? The analog fuzz, the dual circuit analog fuzz. Amazing.
Did you buy anything that wasn't Boss?
Yes, I bought the MXR Variphase. Custom shop phaser, which is on the expression pedal.
Oh, cool. That sounds rad.
And that was it for non-Boss products. I was kind of out there looking for Boss products specifically.
Sure. Most importantly, when are we getting our presents?
I want my gifts.
Where's the gifts? I thought it was traditional for, if someone comes back from Japan or comes from Japan to bring us a little gift.
I bring you gifts.
When Matt came back from Japan last time, he brought my girlfriend a gift.
He bought me a gift. Bought me some Pokemon cards.
I bought you all gifts.
Yeah, I suppose he got Pokemon cards. Maddie got like a Charmander builder block thing.
You guys didn't ask for presents. So.
Yeah, we did.
We asked, every time we spoke to you, we asked for
specifically
presents.
Said, please bring me back £100.
I'm hoping this is a work, Matt.
And sterling.
You've got us some excellent presents, I'm sure. Now you're just playing up to the fact that you haven't got us anything. So I'm looking forward to getting them when we all get together for Gear of the Year. It's going to be fantastic. Good. Well, I'm glad you're settling back in. You could just go to like Argos and get something cool, and we'd be like, yeah, that's fine. We'll just pretend it's from Japan.
Yeah, I'll just like write "Made in Japan" on it.
Yeah, with just a marker pen.
Although I did get my colleague at work possibly the most hilarious pair of underpants ever.
That would have done. I would have taken that.
Because it has some of the best package copy ever. If I find it, I'll read it out on the podcast because it is absolutely amazing.
I love that you mentioned underwear and package in the same thing and didn't make a joke out of it.
But yeah, no, it is actually good to be back. But I haven't got any of the gear because I shipped it all to my parents' house.
So. I was going to ask, how does that work? Did you try and bring it back with you through the airport, or have you sent it back to your parents for Christmas?
It was far too heavy to try and put in my suitcase.
Right, okay.
All that stuff. So I was like, I probably should just like send it. So I posted it.
So you just got the journey back from the magical land of Ipswich to bring it back.
But my Japanese colleague who I did the switch with bought 100 records. Which
really?
I shipped back to him today. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think he spent nearly £1,000 on vinyl.
I guess we don't have any good guitar pedals over here. They've got all the good ones, but we've got all the good records.
Yeah, but the thing is, they have some great records there, because you buy loads of weird Japanese artists you've never heard of.
Like,
yeah.
Mr. Children.
Mr. Children. I actually nearly bought the Laserdisc box set just because it was so hilarious. Obviously, Laserdisc really took off in Japan because you can find them secondhand everywhere, but here, it's like...
Mini disc as well. There's a lot of like original music on mini disc, whereas here I think people just use it to like pirate from the radio and that. So good. Well, really good to have you back, Matty. If you do want to catch up on what Matt's been doing every week, I highly recommend patreon.com/guitar nerds, where you can listen to Matt in Japan. I think did it end up being 10 episodes?
Something 10 like, episodes, yeah, 10 episodes spanning all half an hour long,
spanning 12 weeks.
Yeah, apart from one that was 50 minutes. So, yeah, over 300 hours.
Wait.
It's pretty good.
No, it's not 300 hours. 30 hours.
No, sorry, 300 minutes.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, fine. No, not 30 hours.
300 hours would be great. Yeah. That's more than we've done on the actual podcast.
In fact, what Matt, he just sat down and read Lord of the Rings and then made a podcast out of it. So,
Japanese.
In Japanese.
I directly translated it from Japanese.
Yeah.
That's why it took so long.
It's good. I like you. I like what you did with it. All good. Good to have you back, Matty. Just, before we dive into any news or anything, we're coming up to Christmas and stuff, so we should give you a bit of an overview of what's going on with Guitar Nerds. This is our last regular episode before the new year, and in fact, our last until the 8th of January. Is that right?
Because
we're recording Gear of the Year on the 6th, which is the Saturday, I think.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to edit on the Sunday, the whole thing. Inevitably, it's going to be 7 hours or something. And then they start going up from that Monday. So
we're not doing a regular podcast that week?
No, it'll just be Gear of the Year because it will start on the Monday.
Yeah.
So,
but we've recorded extra stuff as well for people.
But there is a Christmas special going live on Christmas Day. Me, Jay and Joe reading through an old guitar magazine, laughing at the adverts and running through their, what was it, top 100 or top 50 bits of gear
from of the previous 10 years.
94 to 2004, which is quite a cool.
Was it? I thought it was 97 to 2007.
I thought it was something four. Like
maybe it was.
I got a feeling it was four. Okay. So, that's something to look out for. But yeah, just wanted to let you know that there's Gear of the Year is going to be our next kind of real thing. So this is your last episode for 2000 and... Well, the last one we're recording in 2017. So, yeah, lots of fun stuff. And then we're kind of after Gear of the Year. It's NAMM time. And one other thing to bring up before we dive into the news. Guy raised something in the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. He said, this was in reference to last week's podcast. In this week's podcast, Mark mentioned that Gordon Smith went under before being bought by Auden. As far as I know, this is not correct. The guy's just retired and sold the business. No big deal. I just thought it was an important distinction. And that is actually what I meant. Yeah, they basically had enough of doing it and sold the business on. I don't think they went bankrupt or anything. I think it was just didn't continue on with the business and then Auden took them over. So I just wanted to make that clear because, you know, we don't want to, don't want to spread mistruths with this podcast. Oh, not knowingly. We do it pretty much every week unknowingly. But if you've got corrections for things that we say, primarily Joe, do put them in the Facebook group.
When we make mistakes, we put our corrections on the front page, mainstream media.
Indeed, not hidden there or squirreled away in the credits of InfoWars or something
right.
like that.
That's right,
yeah,
mainstream
Alexa.
Media.
So with that, let's dive headfirst into this week's hot dog-shaped pool of...
Nude Apostle.
It's pretty pedal heavy, the news this week. I have to say, we did some guitar stuff last week, but yeah, this week being so close to Christmas, I think all the guitar companies have been like, right, it's just wait for NAMM.
It's not pedal heavy, it's only pedals.
Oh, that's what I mean.
And it's not even very heavy, because there's only three things.
Okay, fine. Well, but some of them are heavy pedals.
And I don't think they all look like they...
No, actually, I think they're all relatively lightweight.
I mean, none of them could kill a man.
I mean, existentially heavy.
Egg?
Existentially. First up,
Jay's vegan, he can't play one of those.
Indeed. First up, Electro-Harmonix finally have officially announced the Op Amp Big Muff Pi. Matty, what's the details?
Oh, this is the best news of the year. They finally reissued the best version, in my opinion, of the Big Muff. The Op Amp, the version 4 from 1978, the one made famous by Billy Corgan. I mean, they've made so many variations and they've tweaked the circuit so many times, but to me this is the one that was always the Big Muff sound that I'd kind of known as, like, yeah, that if you want a Big Muff, that's the sound. It's like the version 4, because all the earlier ones that you kind of hear like Gilmore using, they're not as kind of wall of fuzz like as this one, and that sound is really just that Siamese Dream record and the really early Smashing Pumpkin stuff, but they've basically rehoused it in a nice tiny little box and used the kind of original kind of op amp style circuit, which was originally there to basically bring down costs on the earlier version. So yeah, this is the reissue of the 78, so absolutely amazing. I really want to get one and AB it with my one.
Have you had a chance to listen to any of the videos yet?
Yeah, I think it sounds great. I think it sounds really good. But I, you know, it's always, if you've got like the direct comparison, it's worth doing. I remember when me and Jay compared a new one, this was probably like 3 or 4 years ago, maybe longer, to
yeah,
my
longer,
one.
Yeah, longer, I think.
And it was like, you try the new one, you're like, yeah, it sounds good. But then you try the other one, the old one, you're like, wow, it's like the difference is massive.
It was really funny because it was one of those things where people would come into the shop all the time. And when you work in a guitar shop, there are a few things that you hear all the time. And one of those things is new Big Muffs don't sound as good.
Yeah.
Don't sound the same.
Just old boys coming in and...
And just saying they don't sound as good. And I got so bored of it that I said to Matt, you've got an old Electro-Harmonix Big Muff. Bring it in. And let's do a GAC video on the fact that they sound the same and dispel this rumour. And we were like, yeah, great, let's do it. We got everything. We were ready to go. Couldn't do the video because Matt's one sounded so much better. It was absolutely bonkers.
I mean, when you think about it, the circuit that's in Matt's is quite different.
It's very different, absolutely. Yeah. I actually hadn't appreciated it was an op-amp one at the time. I tell you the other thing that I'm really interested in AB and Matt, and I think it's really interesting that you say that you like this one the best, because for me, the Russian Big Muff was always my favourite.
Green Russian.
Absolutely, and they've just obviously reissued that as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's really cool. I think it'd be great to put those head-to-head and see how they stack up.
Do you think Electro-Harmonix now do more Big Muffs than they do compressors?
I was just thinking that. How many Big Muffs are in the range?
They've always done more Big Muffs than they have anything else.
I'm not sure about that.
If you include all of the Muff pedals, so yeah, like English Muffin, Metal Muff Mini, Deluxe Metal Muff.
God, those are bad.
You know, there are so... Don't you remember? We went through and looked at all of these
a little while.
It wasn't that long ago. There must be 15 different types of Big Muff.
They've released at least two new Big Muffs since then. I mean, they've done two in about 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I know. The Russian one and this one come out super quick. And actually, do you know what? I hadn't really appreciated how much the value was going up on some of the Russian ones until I saw loads for sale in Japan. Like, some of the prices on the green Russian Big Muffs are absolutely, like, horrific. I'm like, that's mental.
Yeah.
And then I had one of the later Russian Big Muffs in the black box, which I sold for £30, and I saw one for sale for £150. I'm like, it sounds terrible.
Yeah, they're not very good.
That was absolute garbage.
Yeah.
But it's amazing, like, how much they're commanding now. Actually, there was a funny video with one orderer and Nick from GitCon where they got an old one, and one was just like, yeah, it doesn't sound very good.
Right. What, one of the Russian Big Muffs?
Yeah, and he was like, it was £350. And he was like, yeah, it's... doesn't sound like it's 350 quid.
Yeah,
but actually I've heard one of the I've heard one of the Russian ones, the new ones, and they sound pretty good.
Yeah, I'd be interested if we could get those two side by side and maybe compare it with your one, Matt. I think that'd be quite a decent demo.
Yeah, let's do it.
Why don't we just buy one of each of the like nano size muffs and lay them out and then just switch between them in a video, because it'll only cost us about 100 quid or something.
So it'd be interesting to try the nano big muff, which was the one that came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
which is different to the little big muff, because I had a little big muff ages ago and it didn't sound fantastic.
Yeah, they just keep
the one I wish I had was that Mogwai one.
Yeah,
wasn't there only like 12 of those or something?
They made 100.
Oh, okay.
Of those, and I'd only ever seen one, and it was when our old colleague Lewis Porter brought one in, which wasn't his, and I was like,
steal it. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, it sounds totally different. They redesigned the circuit for that one as well, so it's a totally unique one.
I'm doing it. We should do Muff Wars. We should get them all in and plug them all in and see what they sound like.
I think that's a great idea.
Little rundown. Talking of pedals and pedal news, Joe Brandt and Death by Audio have released something that sounds like it's going to be a fuzz, but you might want to correct me on that. Destruction.
You are absolutely right. It is a fuzz, but it's a fuzz with a difference. The difference, obviously, how different can a fuzz sound? So they're either, you know, they're either modern or they're traditional, but well, I guess the big muffs are actually a counter argument to that. But anyway, what is really interesting about this Death by Audio pedal is the nature of the controls on it. So there are three controls, but only one of them is rotary, which is the overall level of the effect. It then has two sliders, which in fact work in the opposite direction to each other, which for me just seems to make things confusing for the way you'd use it live. You have the gain and you have the overload. Now, the overload operates as you'd expect. That's like a self-oscillating, also adding an octave up sort of slider, which you can crank and have an absolutely crazy over-the-top octave up, weird, super modern, super compressed, noise-gated fuzz. Or you can pull that down completely the other way and like starve the circuit, so you get a really like glitchy,
like broken sound.
Yeah, exactly, which sounds really interesting. So obviously I haven't heard this yet. It's very difficult to judge fuzzes based on like YouTube demos and stuff, but I'm really into the idea that these controls are a little bit different, and I really like super gated fuzzes, and Death by Audio make great pedals, so this seems like it's pretty cool, pretty exciting.
I like the idea of the sliders on the regular compact style pedal, because obviously we've seen them on things like the ES2,
the Ibanez
Echo Shifter.
Yeah,
but totally putting them onto a regular kind of pedal board size pedal, I think, is a neat concept.
Yep, and this is only $180, so that's, you know, a perfectly sort of average price for a boutique fuzz these days, so I think it's super cool. And actually, yeah, I'm getting really into weird controls, because you know what I was been checking out, spending a lot of time with, is that that pedal that
booze for,
no yeah but yeah, other than that, the very pedal that Boss for some reason have never reissued, but TC have done that for them, the TC Electronic Dimension Chorus.
Yes,
or Third Dimension, sorry.
Third Dimension.
Yeah, which is great. I love just having buttons to control you know, presets of chorus on that pedal. So this pedal, listeners, if you're not aware, the Boss originally made a pedal which Matt has, a Mauve Chorus, the Dimension C, which rather than having any rotary or slider controls, just has four preset buttons, so four completely predetermined chorus sounds, and you can choose between them. You can have one of the four. What TC have done is reissued essentially this pedal. It's the same control setup. It's also Mauve. It's called the Third Dimension. What's different is now not only can you choose each of these options individually, you can have any selection of them or all of them.
You push all the buttons in together.
Yeah, so you can use them concurrently or individually. So you can have up to 16 different preset sounds of chorus. And the great thing is, because everything's predetermined, they sound good in any configuration. Like, you know, on rotary controls there's always going to be somewhere where a pedal doesn't work properly or doesn't really sound very good. These are 16 really usable chorus presets, and you know, the pedal's 50 quid. I think it's great. I can't wait for the Boss Wazzlecraft one.
Yeah. We can only hope.
Joe,
that
just
boss have got that on the way.
Just going back to the Death by Audio.
Yes.
Those sliders, I mean, whenever I see a pedal, whenever I see sliders on a pedal like that, I'm drawn to make a harmonic percolator.
Yeah.
Oh, of course, harmonic percolator's got those kind of sliders.
Yeah.
As
it does,
well.
Yeah. And I wondered if this is just that sort of thing. Is it not?
No,
I think it uses a different circuit.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the overload control is bringing in several things, because I think that's controlling the octave up for this fuzz, but it also seems to be controlling like the noise gate and like some sort of self-oscillating element of the effect as well. Because it basically looks like if you shut it down or use it in sort of a reasonable position... and use your gain, you'll have a relatively traditional sounding fuzz, but
right,
boost
okay.
it up and then it turns into those sort of like a Fuzz Factory sort of style sounds, that okay. sort of Empress fuzz kind of thing.
We need to go and check those guys out at NAMM, because last year they had loads of cool, like, one-off cool painted designs, and their booth was wicked last year.
Yeah, I'm up for that. Definitely go and check out some weirdness at Death by Audio.
Talking about the harmonic percolator,
yes.
I know it was me that was talking about it, but did you see another pedal that was announced this week that we wasn't in the news? Was the Land Devices HP2?
Oh, I love Land Devices.
Yeah. See,
mainly because all their pedals look like Land Rovers.
Do they look like Land Rovers?
Well, they look like military things, don't they?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, this has got that. This has got that really going on. This they actually do just call a what. This is their first pedal.
Right.
And the other pedal that they've done is the EP2.
Is that the one that you've seen? Is that...
Probably. Yeah.
I think they're a relatively new company, because I had not heard of them before. And the...
They do look really military.
They do, yeah. So, just for the benefit of Mark
no,
and Joe...
I must be
this is the,
different.
This is the EP2, which is an Echoplex...
Nice.
So they're literally, they're just calling these, yeah, this is an Echoplex equivalent, and this is a harmonic
percolator
equivalent.
I must be thinking
equivalent.
Of someone else, but I love the look.
It looks fantastic,
oh,
yeah.
That Echoplex one looks amazing.
By the looks of things, they are, these pedals are both sold out already, so, you know, quite, I'm not sure how many they've made, but
two.
This looks fantastic, really, really cool. You've got, HP2, you've also got an extra switch on there that switches from the standard circuit to a Doom circuit.
Doom.
Okay. And it's not sliders. They're like big, big
oversized
knobs.
Rotaries. Big knobs. But the whole idea of the look of these pedals is that they're super simple, like
yeah.
stamped controls. And this one is just like military green.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They look fantastic. I definitely recommend people checking out Land Devices. Not a company that I heard of before. Very cool.
Someone we have heard of before, and someone who you're a big fan of, Carl Martin.
Yeah. So
have reissued the DC Drive?
Well, it's difficult to see. I mean, so the DC Drive is a pedal that has existed for a long time, and it's in that sort of big, clunky Carl Martin chassis. The DC Drive
chassis.
Also has a boost. Now, the new DC Drive, which isn't called like the DC Drive 2 or anything,
just
it's
DC
still
drive.
Just the DC Drive. It's just a very small, compact one switch pedal with you know, volume, tone, and gain on it. And then you've also got a regular and fat switch. But yeah, no boost on it, which is very weird, I think, in, you know, considering it's kind of a reissue. But the thing that I do think is really cool about it is the fact that it has got... it's built into a new, completely new chassis. So this, I think it looks really nice. It's got like a... Mm. It's got like a sort of a bent metal front.
Yeah.
Really nice curvature to it.
Because Carl Martin stuff is always pretty blocky. And
yeah.
it's often been oversized. So if you're putting a pedal board together...
Well, do you remember I had a hot drive and boost for a long time.
Which was
hardwired.
Yeah.
I mean, what were you thinking?
Yeah. But they've kind of moved away from that, haven't they? The hardwired stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. They haven't done one of those for quite a while.
But still, the boxes are pretty big and not very... ergonomic, whereas this new kind of chassis they're working with seems to be a bit more designed with pedal boards in mind.
Absolutely. And what I'm really hoping that this leads to is a, you know, maybe a bit of a resurgence of the Carl Martin stuff. They've done some great pedals over the years, like the Delayler, fantastic delay pedal, the Red Repeat I really liked as well.
the TOD, I thought, was really good. That was their like turbo overdrive, and they made that really cool fuzz and vibe pedal, the Purple Moon, which I had for a little while, which was amazing.
And also the surf trim, that green one.
Yeah, surf trim. That's it. I mean, they've done some great pedals, and they always seem to disappear because it's just not particularly ergonomically designed. And for a lot of people who've got pedal boards, unfortunately, there are some parameters that you've got to fit in with nowadays.
Well, not hardwired.
Well, that's certainly one thing. But I think that this new design of this Karl Martin pedal looks fantastic, and I really do hope that they roll that out to some of the older classic pedals to bring those back into 2018. As it
they never
be.
Do great
and
marketing.
Not tons of money.
$139.
They never do great marketing. It's a great company, make great products, but they're just not really. They don't seem to be up to speed with how people want their news and stuff delivered.
No, yeah, no. I mean, look at their logo. Their logo is purple and black, and seems to have like an eclipsed sun in the background.
Yeah, it's got a bit of an 80s vibe. It's a little bit Short Circuit. but yeah, I think if they've got some new pedals and stuff, as long as they get the message out there and get them out to the right people, i.e., us.
Yeah.
You know, they could really do something. This company, I think. You know,
1993, the Hot Driving Boost.
Well, there we go. Is that the first pedal?
The first pedal. Yeah.
Nice.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Yes, well, we'll have to see if we can get any of the new stuff. That is the end of the news for this week. Not a huge amount, but there was another thing about a big Green Day guitar sale. I don't know if you guys saw
I don't have the details.
Yeah, Reverb. I was actually just having a look at that. It's absolutely... I mean, Reverb are kind of smashing it at the moment with that, because they've got like a total niche that no one has. You know, it's like any store can sell on their website, but then they can also have their own store on there as well.
Yeah.
And that's where they do all these things. So yeah, there's a what they're calling the Green Day garage sale. But it looks like one of his 1960 Les Paul Juniors is going on there.
59 one Les of his Paul Gibson Jr. Les,
yeah, the Les Paul Junior in Sunburst, like the classic single cut, 59 double cut. And actually, yeah, it looks like some proper stuff, because there was a Jay Maskus one recently, and everyone's like, oh, but it clearly stated at the bottom after all the text, like, Jay Maskus will be selling no fuzz pedals.
Oh, yeah.
Like, no big buffs. And, like, all of the stuff is, like, because he was just, like, clearing out. Like, obviously, these people end up with loads of stuff. Just clearing out stuff that's just not used or they just bought. So a lot of times you get stuff that was never on a record or anything like that. But this actually looks like proper stuff that he's actually used.
Yeah, that looks it looks awesome. I mean, that Junior, so it was 56?
There's a 60.
Sorry, 60.
Yeah, I guess a 60 and a 59, the Juniors.
Yeah.
I don't know about the single coil Les Paul Junior.
Single cut.
Single coil.
Yeah, well, they all are.
Well, okay, coil. But it's in a small... That's not a...
That's a P90.
Is it just a P90 chassis?
Yeah.
All right.
Just regular... How many times have we said chassis on this podcast?
Chassis.
We've learned a new word. Yeah, they all look pretty stunning. I'm going to go and check out that the rest of the stuff. Loads of Gretsch as well.
Really cool Gretsches.
Loads of money.
Some of these.
How much for that Les Paul, the single cut Les Paul?
The Billy Corgan one was like... Some of them were like extreme money, but I think it was just there for like open for offers.
Yeah.
But then I saw something today and I didn't look into it. I saw on some forum that there was like some Neil Young Behringer pedal that someone bought. It was like a Behringer delay that went for sale that was used by Neil Young, and it went for like $400. And someone was like, but they're $25 new.
I mean, I think in guitar, selling a secondhand guitar is a little bit different to selling a secondhand pedal. Like, I don't think... There's some rare cases, but you can't really overcharge for the fact that celebrities owned a pedal. I mean, like, unless it's used on a very particular song or in a very particular way, if they've just used it live and like trodden on it a few times, it's not really worth that much, is it?
I think if it's a vintage one, especially with like vintage fuzz pedals, I think like obviously certain parts can change, but then so much can change with like the way that you actually record a guitar sound. Did you see that Steve Albini sold the three microphones that were used on Nevermind for Kurt Cobain's vocals?
In utero.
Yeah. And they were up for like $70,000, I think.
What?
He was just like, I don't want them. Like, they're a piece of history. They should just go to someone who's actually going to use them. They're too fragile. But they're in the gatefold of the record.
Him
singing to all three mics. And he's like, yeah, those are the three mics.
That'd be all right, wouldn't it? Just 70 grand.
Good on him.
I'd take that. Anyway, with that, shall we get on with this week's round of...
Questions!
Joe says, just wondering what the opinions here of Dweet...
Excuse me?
What the opinions are of Duesenberg.
Did you just really do that?
Duesenberg.
It's definitely not Duesenberg.
It's Duesenberg.
Duesenberg.
Wow. I don't know what Duesenberg are.
I recently bought a Star Player Special baritone.
I can't believe this.
I know what they are.
Oh, right.
I just didn't know how you pronounce it. Duesenberg. Duesenberg. Right.
Carry on.
I recently bought a Star Player Special baritone. I needed a baritone to write on. I was quietly excited about welcoming...
To write on?
I was kind of...
Get some paper.
I was quietly excited about welcoming one of these awesome-looking... Duesenberg guitars into my gang. It does look cool, but I must say I'm very underwhelmed by the guitar. I've lost his email. My email.
It feels and sounds to me like a Korean-made guitar.
There we go.
Which is fine, but I think not for £1,200. Not that that is the be-all and end-all, but the body is three-piece, which again I would not expect for the money.
Okay, so Star Player Special baritone. I assume this is a hollow body guitar.
Yeah. A lot of their ones are hollow body. So they're a German company.
Yep.
That make like I think like amazing looking guitars and some questionable
incredible signature
models. I mean, I don't really need a Johnny Depp signature model, but you know.
Oh yeah.
Probably anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really
into
that
another
these
day.
Days. Yeah.
But this is the thing is that they've never officially announced where the guitars are made, but they start at 1200 and they go up to about 2700.
Okay. Surely they have to state somewhere where they're made.
Oh, I'm sure.
I think they say, like, made in Germany, but I don't think it's, like, actually crafted in Germany. I think, basically, they're built in a Korean factory and then they're assembled in Germany.
But we start to get into... And what we have to say is we don't actually know that, and if they haven't said that, we don't know.
That's the thing, because I sold them when I was at Anderson's, and I had no clear answer even at that point. I was thinking about where they're made, and it's like they don't actually state where they're made, so I can't officially tell you where they're made. Now, one of the guys who's on the forum, who's actually one of the techs there at Anderson, said that that's where we're, but that's not official, so I'm not going to go into that's officially how they're done. But they are, I think, quite good value for money on the lower price ones. Some of the more expensive ones, I'm a bit... That is fairly expensive for what they are. But then so much, I think we had this conversation a few months ago about how good stuff is coming out of the Korean
Absolutely.
Factories.
Sure.
I'm just like, 1200 quid actually is the kind of... 1200 is like the new standard, I would say, for like a benchmark price Like, if you know, like, it was always,
well, because the pound got devalued by about 20%.
yeah
no, but you know how, like, you always had Mexican Strat, and that was kind of like your entry, and then you always had like the American Standard, which was, you know, maybe 899 when I first started selling them, or maybe even slightly less, and that was kind of like your benchmark guitar. And then, like, if you went way above that, you got like expert guitars and, you know, these like handcrafted things. But I think 12, because the way that kind of guitars and prices have changed and where they're being built, 1200 seems to be like, that's the money you need to spend to open up all your choices. I think under that, there's not a huge amount of choice anymore, but 1200 seems to be there are a lot more around that price range.
I think there is, but you're kind of openly saying, like, I want to go for the lower priced option. So, for example, if you take the Music Man stuff, you know, anything under that kind of price point is the Sterling range, and anything above it is the you know, regular Music Man. Same with Fender, I guess. Well, the elites coming in, professionals coming in at
1300
quid. So anything below that is, you know, Classic Player or American Special still kicking around.
Yep.
Gibson is a little bit of an anomaly, because obviously you're looking at,
you can get an American made Gibson for $399.
You can't, well, at the moment, $399, yeah. But I guess they
start being good normally kind of around the $899 mark.
But if you're looking above,
just because Gibson is so much better than everyone else.
Yeah, okay, fine. But if you're thinking above a studio, then it's about 1200 quid, isn't it? That kind of price point. So, yeah, I tend to agree. Unless you're looking at companies like Reverend, which I think are very good, they tend not to stray too far up towards that price point. They're generally
are sort of Eastern build things.
Yeah. So the Star Player Special, I mean, one of the things here is that it's a three-piece body. But looking at a Star Player Special, isn't it a hollow body guitar?
It's a single cut. What
is it, like Les Paul style?
Yeah, sort of. It's a semi-hollow Les Paul style baritone guitar. I mean, I'm surprised that Joe's had an issue with the quality. I mean, fine, you know, if he says it's three-piece, but I've always thought of Duesenberg as kind of representing this real, like, high-end quality mark for people who like sort of 60s or maybe slightly more Italian inspired guitars, that whole retro look, the whole sort of super Gretsch thing. I've always thought that Duesenberg is sort of representing a do you like these sort of things but actually want tuners that work and bridges that function properly and nice pickups. That's what Duesenberg has always been for me. You know, Duesenberg do a violin bass as well, and it's just, they've got rid of all the quirks that Hofner keep that prevent the violin bass from being a sort of a modernly applicable instrument.
Yeah.
I've always thought about them across the range for sort of achieving that. Admittedly, you know, a lot of their stuff is hitting the $2,000, $2,500 mark. So Duesenberg are a high-end brand, but I think for attention to detail, certainly, you know, finish-wise, looks-wise, everyone that I've played, I've been thoroughly impressed with.
Yeah, I must admit, I've been impressed with all the ones I've played. Some of the, like, they do the Mike Campbell Giant Hollow Body. It's got an inbuilt, like, distortion circuit and stuff in it. They're great guitars. The one thing I don't get that someone might be able to answer just quickly is how they can be called Duesenberg when you have Duesenberg cars and other two related in any way. That's one thing I could never find out, because that's where the phrase "that's a doozy" comes from.
Really?
If something comes from Duesenberg cars. So in the 30s and 40s they were like the most premium cars you could buy, and like if something was amazing, it's like, oh, that's a doozy, and Duesenberg, and that's where the phrase comes from.
I assume they're not related, and to be honest, like, companies can have the same name if they don't produce a similar product.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, look at Boss.
Exactly. Hugo Boss and Boss
Coffee, which is the biggest
Boss
brand.
The Boss Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't make a similar product. Jay, what are we saying on the name? You're doing some reading.
I am. Duesenberg is spelled the same as the automobile brand founded in 1920s by brothers Friedrich and August Duesenberg. They themselves had become highly respected for outstanding design, performance, and luxury, just like the cars. That's a nice little
Is that on their Wikipedia?
This is on the Duesenberg Guitars Wikipedia.
Oh, okay.
Duesenberg Instruments are also called doozy or juicy, which have become a slang expression for extravagance and enthusiasm in past decades, originally associated with the automobiles. Rumour has it, when Ron Wood, guitarist of the... first unpacked his signature edition, he apparently said, "Ooh, what a doozy," which may be the actual reason why Duesenberg guitars... I think someone's
been messing with it.
I think someone's having a laugh here. I don't really understand what's going on. This seems a little bit...
bit dubious, if you will. In answer to the question, firstly, him saying it feels like a Korean-made guitar, we've talked about this so many times, but as long as it feels good and you like it, that doesn't really matter. If you feel like it feels like a £1,200 guitar, you know, it's kind of... It doesn't matter whether it feels Korean or American, and if it does the job...
How can something... feel like a factory? That's what I don't understand. How can you go, "Oh, that feels Korean"?
Mark reckons you can. We've had this discussion
I think we remember this a few months ago.
I think it probably was when you weren't on a podcast, Matty. I think it was while you were off. But I think that guitars of different countries do have very distinctive feels. A Chinese guitar feels different from a Korean guitar. A Korean guitar feels different from an American guitar, and so on and so on. But it doesn't mean they're better or worse most of the, you know, a lot of the time. A Chinese guitar generally will not feel or won't be as nice because it's generally a cheaper guitar, you know. But anyway, I think forget about the fact that it feels Korean. It doesn't really matter. If you feel like you've got a decent playing guitar for the money that you paid, that's fine. It doesn't matter where it feels like it came from. The thing for me would just be, if you're not into it, and you can return it, then do that. You know, it really is a case of, if you just don't get on with it, send it back. Get one that you do like.
If you want to kill a baritone, ML3 would be a signature. £1,200. That's such a great guitar.
The Chapman ML3.
Yeah, definitely. That's
absolutely amazing. For the money, that is, hands down, I think, one of the best playing guitars, and a baritone as well. Like, amazing.
Definitely, yeah, we like that a lot. Kaysen says, best use of vibrato, the effect, not the technique, in a song. Joey B, this seems like it might be up your street.
I saw this question on the group and I was like, oh, this will be well up my street because I have vibrato on like almost all the time. And I realised that I can't think of any actual music where, you know, any sort of famous bands that use vibrato an awful lot. I mean, I think it's applicable more kind of, you know, in a genre sense of the word. I think vibrato is great for soundscaping, like partnering it up with things like the Digitech Time Bender or delays or weird delays or weird reverbs, things like the Earthquaker devices, Afterneath, anything that gives you weird modulated tails, plus the vibrato of your note rather than like using a tremolo where you're just sort of cutting the note. Those two things together are great for making spooky soundscape kind of noises. I think vibrato's got loads of really useful application. Great for soundscaping, but it crucially needs to be partnered with something. I mean, I actually use it on its Todd, but I'm trying to make like weird spooky bass sounds.
Matt,
just thinking.
Yeah.
Vibrato. Joe, you'll probably be the only... Well, maybe Jay might know this riff, but One Arm Scissor by the Mars Volta,
yeah.
The lead line, isn't that vibrato?
Probably.
Thinking of vibrato and distortion, that's the only example I could think of actual vibrato.
Yeah. And
it was a totally unpopular effect when it first came out.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a total failure.
It took you guys long enough to reissue the VB2 which is a great pedal and an absolute staple on my board. But you know, it's very recent that it came out, and before then we were relying on Behringer Ultra Vibratos because no one was doing it right, because Univibes don't,
it's a different thing.
Yeah, they're not extreme enough, and there was no one doing it, and so yeah, the only option was that Behringer Ultra Vibrato.
Yeah.
And then there was the TC did the Shaker, which was also really good, but I think for me, yeah, the VB2W is absolutely killer. Oh, in fact, speaking of vibrato, this is quite a nice segue into this. In January, TC Electronics are launching...
Are you getting paid by TC on this episode?
Why?
Just mention them a lot.
I'm mates with Tor.
Yeah, okay, I'll see. Just
anyway.
Slipping you a free pizza or something every now and then.
Yeah. They're launching my tone print, my Guitar Nerds tone print. Yep. Which is a
bone print.
Which is a they're putting out some bone videos, some videos of me and Tor making a tone print together. And okay. I made a I've got my own shaker vibrato.
Did you do this with your Guitar Nerds hat on or Polymath hat on?
Well, it was for Polymath or songs, but I'm being interviewed as part of Guitar Nerds.
Good.
So everyone, everyone in the boss office kept asking for Bo.
Did
like,
they?
Oh, can we meet Bo?
You're going to have to go over there. What if it's like, you know, Beatles Go to America? What if you get swamped when you land? Just millions of Bow fans turn up.
So, okay, so TC sent me the 3 YouTube videos for approval. I think I showed you guys this last week, didn't
you
I?
Did.
But I will tell everyone. TC sent me the 3 videos they're putting out of me for approval. And they're great, they're fine. The videos are well edited enough, they're fine. And then... it sort of Tor introduces it, says he's talking to me, and then my name flashes up on the screen and it says Joe Banton.
Yes.
Some sort of crossbreed between Bo Banton and myself.
It's the Brundlefly machine. Just right. You're in there and you've Brundlefly'd yourself.
Great.
There are elements. I like to think that you, Joe and Bo, as two separate parts of your personality, and Joe Banton is the ultimate mix. That's who you really are.
Dr. Branton and Mr. Bo.
Yes, someone please Photoshop that. Oh, I forgot to say, we got an excellent song through this week.
I didn't hear it yet.
Remix. I'll play it to you guys at the end, and I might put it at the beginning of the podcast, actually, as a special little Christmas treat, because
fantastic.
It is fantastic. But I forgot, we should mention it at the beginning, maybe. Maybe I'll do a little intro to it. It's some excellent work from a loyal Guitar Nerds listener, Moog Gravit. Chad says, so, is the Baja Telly that much better? I love the look, colour, vintage vibe, pickup, switching, etc. And overall, just want one of the 60s in faded sonic blue. Would it be dumb to trade my Mexican Standard and an Epiphone ES-339 to find out the Baja is not really far off my Mexican Standard? Especially since my Mexican Telly already has an ashtray bridge and Goto brass saddles. J. Cross.
I mean, you know what I'm going to say.
We're asking the wrong person, really.
You know what I'm going to say.
I mean, I completely agree with what you're going to say, but I really don't like Mexican standards.
No, I understand that. I've always felt that you could do worse than to spend a little bit more money up front and get a classic player over a standard. But that said, Chad has done a bit of that in that he's bought a Mexican standard and then put an Astro Bridge and Goto brass saddles on it, which is going to make it have more of that vintage vibe.
100%.
You know, it's going to make it sound a bit more ringy and everything. I think a lot of it comes down to how you feel about the neck.
Well, that's, yeah, exactly. It's going to be the feel, isn't it?
Yeah,
do you
completely.
Like vintage necks?
I mean, depending on where you go, because the 50, so the original Baja, which you can get in black, blonde, and...
it's honey blonde and...
no, it's butterscotch blonde.
Butterscotch blonde and...
black and there's one other colour.
The white one.
No, it's not white. Oh, anyway, it doesn't matter.
I thought there were just two.
Maybe it is just two.
No, there's
maybe
three, just three colours.
Okay. Maybe it's... oh, yeah, and then just a two-colour sunburst.
Oh, right. Wasn't there a vintage white one, though?
There have been numerous FSRs.
Yeah, okay.
No, there was a vintage white classic player.
That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. Classic player, yeah.
Right.
Classic vibe.
Classic vibe.
Right, okay. So
no, it's not confusing. Modern player, classic vibe, classic player.
So anyway, with the 50s model...
Modern vibe.
With the 50s model, you've got Custom Shop, Twisted Telly and Broadcaster pickups and a really chunky 50s style neck. And then with the 60s, which is the one that Chad is suggesting he's thinking about getting, you've got a slimmer neck with a rosewood board, and then it's got... which is a bit weird, but it's got an American Vintage 52 in the bridge and an American Vintage 58 in the neck. So they're 50s pickups, but on a 60s spec guitar. And that, I actually think, has got a really nice, really easy playing neck. But you've still got the sort of ringy saddles, the ashtray bridge. And I just think, all in all, they're just better guitars.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the difference between when we started podcasting, when these guitars were, you know, 500 quid, and it was only a hop, step and a jump up from a Mexican standard. There is a bit more of a difference now. for me, I still think it's the best guitar you can buy for under £1,000.
Well, it comes down to the whole concept behind Classic Player as a range, which we've spoken about loads, but I guess we haven't spoken about recently. Which,
yeah, it feels like Baha Tellys have kind of, you know, we haven't. I can't remember the last time we actually talked about a Baha.
It's because every time I do it, people who are driving to work have to pull over and go and take a shot, and no one ever gets to work on
but
this.
But explain for listeners who might not be aware the concept behind Classic Player and how it came to be.
So the Classic Player guitars are Mexican-built Fenders that were designed by the custom shop guys, who basically said, right, if you want to build a really banging guitar for X amount of money, you should use this spec, use this neck, use these pickups, paint it in these colours because they look cool, and this, that, and the other. And there you go. You've got your budget custom shop guitar. So that's where that came from. And I've always thought that the Baja was the standout model of all of those Classic Players. And I know I'm boring, and people who've been listening to us for the last 4 years are just, their eyes have fallen back inside of their brains because they're so bored of hearing me talk about Baja Telly. But they're so good. They're so good. The four-way switch, you've got a bridge. Normal neck and bridge, neck, and then you stick it in the fourth position and you go neck into bridge like a stacked humbucker in series. Oh god, they're so good.
My only thing would be that in comparison to when they first launched, there is a lot of competition for me at a similar price point.
Agreed.
That is not necessarily from Fender. I really, really like the Sterling James Valentine.
Agreed. Yeah, so
I think
do I.
That would, in terms of feel, because I haven't spent much time with it plugged in. In terms of feel, that would be up there with the Baja Telly. Also, the, as we've talked about many times, the Reverend. And if you want a Telly, the Buckshot, I think it's called, is the one with the Telly pickup in the bridge and a Gretsch pickup in the neck, which would be really, really nice. I think feel-wise, that is up there with the Baja Telly. So there's a few other options. I wouldn't just pin all your hopes on a Baja Telly. Maybe have a look around at some other recommended guitars at sort of £700-800.
And then decide that you were wrong to deviate from the Baja Telly, the best guitar you can buy for under £1,000.
You will probably end up buying a Baja Telly because it is very, very good.
They are so good.
But the thing is, the 50s one, it's not just the thickness of the neck that's nice, it's the extra weight of that neck that gives it more resonance and a little bit more depth. And they're just a great guitar.
Yeah. Let's do one last quick question. Ed, friend of the podcast, Ed McNulty, says, could anyone recommend a chorus and reverb pedal similar to the Ryan Adams VCR, or should I try and sell me a bassist on the VCR? Matt, what do you reckon?
I think it's a great pedal. I think it just isn't like an all-in-one, just three controls, volume, chorus and reverb, and then you can just set and forget. I don't know how much he's really going to need to change the sounds very much between. I mean, do you think it's just going to be like a set and forget thing, or does he really want to like adjust? Because if you want to like mess around with different reverb types or maybe kind of dial it in a bit more, then it's probably better going for two separate pedals.
Yeah, there's probably not one pedal that's going to do that. There are very few combination chorus and reverb, I guess.
But there are some things out there that will do a similar thing, because the concept of this is, which is a great idea, which is similar to what I was suggesting with the vibrato, is modulating your reverb or your delay just to make it a bit thicker, a bit wider. And there are a couple of other pedals that will do that sort of thing, modulation on your delay or reverb, not necessarily strictly chorus.
Yeah, but I think in the VCR, I think they sit in parallel. I don't think they run in series.
Right, I see.
So you're not actually running one into the other. They're just kind of being merged together at the end. So the idea, I think, was that you basically, he loves the sound of an old, I think he was like, oh, I love the sound of my old CE2 and then like an old hall reverb. So the reverb's not even a spring, it's a hall. So yeah, I think it's like a CE2, a Hall reverb, and then just a volume boost.
That's pretty
cool.
And
I think they run in parallel, and then it's just like, it's just a tone in a box. It's like a Ryan Adams tone in a box. I think maybe it'd be better to go for a separate chorus and reverb.
I think especially as a bass player, I think choruses really need some controls on them. Otherwise they're just too toppy. Just as an effect, they tend to be geared to be so toppy for bass players, so it can be a little tricky.
One thought, does the RE20 have any modulation on it? Does it have any chorus function?
No, it's just got reverb.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are...
And delay, obviously.
There are two things, both by the same company, both different types of pedals that occurred to me, just because they give so much modulation to the reverb on them. And the Meris Mercury 7 reverb.
That's a good shout, yeah.
And actually, the new Meris delay, which is kind of a reverb-y delay because it's so washy, like the delay tails are so dark it's almost a reverb, which is the Polymoon, and both of them have their own like dimension controls or modulation controls,
yeah,
which is kind of essentially chorus. So especially the Mercury 7 I think is gives you the option to like heavily modulate all your verb and create some real interesting soundscape things. I think for bass that would be a super interesting pedal to try out, because I think you've got enough control on there that you can thicken everything up. That said, Meris pedals are in pounds £319 a pop, no matter what pedal you go for in their range, so they're super super expensive, but really good.
Yeah. So some options there to explore. I don't think any of us have tried that stuff on bass, unless you've tried the Meris stuff on bass.
Yeah, I've tried the Meris stuff on bass. It's cool. Sounds cool.
Well, there we go. So maybe check that one out, Ed. But also,
I'm actually going to be with him next week.
Well, maybe just...
So I'll film a... Ed McNulty buys a chorus and reverb pedal.
That sounds good.
Video.
Put Instagram stories that.
There we go.
Sounds good. With that, we should wrap up this final episode for 2017. If you want
to
hear...
One awful way to finish.
What? Just talking about Ed McNulty?
Bigging up Ed McNulty. Yeah,
he's such an idiot. With that, we should wrap this up. We're going to be going over to the Patreon episode to record half an hour extra like we do every week. This week, we're going to be talking about things we want to see in 2018.
This is the sort of thing that I like to do.
Yeah. Matt, are you going to be joining us or do you need to go to sleep?
I will join you as long as we don't take too long to crack straight back into it.
Good. Matt, he's going to join us on that.
He looks like he's going to pass out.
Yeah, he looks like he's going to fall asleep. He's on Tokyo time. So, I'm glad you're joining us, Matt. That's all I'm saying. If you want to hear
it's the end of the year, isn't it?
Christmas. If you want to hear that, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. At the $5 a month tier, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week, plus access to the mini series and interviews that we do, including Branton's Rant On, the series where Joe Branton rants on things that he hates. We're in the middle of series 2 at the moment. Episode 4 just came out, is that right?
Episode 3
just came out, so there's 3 more of those to go. Plus you can listen to all of Matt's tour diaries. Like he said, there's over 300 hours on there
of Matt's tour diary indeed.
But yeah, loads of other stuff as well, an extra half an hour every week. At the $10 tier, you get your name read out on the end of the podcast by Joe Branton in one breath, like these people have. What backing track should we do?
Matt Roberts, team lead, Eric Witts, the Martin Cliff, Matt Davis, Eric German, Blake Weiler, Jake Craig, Christopher Lawson, Juan Trevier, Scott Kennedy, Robin Smith, Rob Nordvig, Rob Grant, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Carlos Manchester, Steve Markham, Lad Dobbs, Mark Cross, Brad Bays, Jaden Short, Danny McKenzie, Laurie Esther, Jack Gatley, Paul Corrigan, Matt Cohen, Will Thompson, Scott O'Brien, Phil Thompson, Moore, Graham, and Colin Anderson. That's the way you do it. I can keep on talking for as long as I want. I don't need breath. Breath is for weak humans. I am not a weak human. I am an immortal god. An immortal god. Merry Christmas, everyone.
I love the idea of someone just listening to this in their car with like actual normal family members in there. Maybe they've saved it up for a Christmas drive home and they've got their family in there.
Driving home with Brenton.
Maybe they're driving home for Christmas. Chris Rea had a heart attack the other day, didn't he?
Chris Rea had a heart attack?
Yeah.
Sounds like
Joe's having one right now. Are you okay?
Yeah.
With that, we should definitely wrap this up. If you want to join in the conversation, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds, and follow us on YouTube at youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. It's definitely the end of the year. Definitely Christmas break is coming up. We're going to take 2 weeks off. Do catch the Christmas special. Do sign up for Patreon and listen to Matt's tour diary. And do join us. Oh, the next time we're going to be in this room, boys, is going to be for probably 8 to 9 hours recording Gear of the Year, which will be coming on the 8th of January.
Bloody hell.
Oh, God. Thanks very much, and we'll speak to you next time. Have a good Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas and prosper.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.